This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So the government needs to put in all the measures to reduce the spread of the locusts and particularly prevent the eggs from hatching into new swarms, because immediately the eggs hatch, then we have a new swarm, or a new swarm will keep on developing.
That was Claire Nasik from Greenpeace Africa on concerns the coronavirus could hamper the fight against invading locusts in eastern Africa. Details next. Also, there are calls for journalists in jails to be released amid the spread of the coronavirus. And South Africa, the nationwide lockdown is creating hardship into its 1 million domestic workers. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Flight restrictions imposed by governments in response to the novel coronavirus pandemic are hampering efforts to tackle swarms of locusts destroying crops in East Africa. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says the restrictions have delayed deliveries of pesticides, and at the current rate of spraying, stocks in Kenya will run out within days. Cyril Ferrand is the head of resilience for Eastern Africa at FAO.
With COVID-19 reaching Africa, we obviously had to adjust the way we operate on the desert locust control operation this season. It means that at the moment, some supply of equipment and pesticide have been slowed down, and we are engaged in managing stocks of pesticide in order to prevent any disruption of control operation.
Kenya and several other East African countries have been battling the worst desert locust invasion in 70 years. The swarms have destroyed crops, posing a threat to food security. The global COVID-19 pandemic has stifled efforts aimed at tackling the locust plague. The senior FAO official says if control operations fail, some 4 million more people in the region would struggle to feed their families.
Despite COVID-19, the Food and Agriculture Organization is still able to support governments in the control of desert locusts in the entire region. This is due to the fact that governments have declared that desert locust is a national priority, which means that we are still able to move within the country in order to control desert locusts.
Claire Nasike is a food campaigner at Greenpeace Africa.
Bearing in mind that we have had locust invasion for the past 3 months, the government has suddenly forgotten about controlling locusts, and now it's focused all its effort into dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. But food is needed for people to be able to survive. So the government needs to put in all the measures to reduce the spread of the locusts and particularly prevent the eggs from hatching into new swarms, because immediately the eggs hatch, then we have a new swarm, or a new swarm will keep on developing afterwards.
According to the Reuters news agency, the Rome-based UN agency said in Kenya it would seek to procure pesticides locally if the delays persist. The COVID-19 pandemic has forced governments to close their borders, reducing cargo flights and disrupting global supply chains, including the production of pesticides in Europe and Asia. Already, governments are stocking up food supplies as they brace for worst-case scenarios. Kenyan authorities recently allowed processors to import 4 million bags of maize to beat a looming deficit. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The Committee to Protect Journalists and Other Rights Group are demanding that journalists in jails across the continent should be released amid the spread of the coronavirus. They added that journalists should not be in jail in the first place for doing their jobs. VOA's Salem Salomon has the report.
As the coronavirus spreads to all corners of the African continent, advocacy groups are calling for the release of a particularly vulnerable group, jail journalists. In an open letter to 10 African heads of state, the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ, and 80 other press freedom and human rights groups called for the media professionals to be freed.
There are in jails that, you know, are overcrowded. where there are underlying health conditions, where malaria and TB is a problem. So really, their lives are at risk here, and many of them are actually haven't even been convicted. They have been sitting in detention for years without trial.
That was Angela Quinto, CPJ's Africa Program Coordinator. In a survey conducted at the end of 2019, CPJ found that at least 73 journalists were in prison in Africa, including 26 in Egypt, 16 in Eritrea, and 7 in Cameroon. Some of the Eritrean journalists have been imprisoned since 2001.
When it comes to journalists who are being held there, not because they have committed a crime, but are being held because of their journalism, it is necessary to ensure that these journalists are not stuck with what we call a death sentence, that their freedom is really now a matter of life and death.
One person who knows these difficulties is Mimi Mofota Kumbo, a print and broadcast journalist from Cameroon. In 2018, she was arrested and charged with reporting false information and undermining state security for a story about an American missionary who was shot and killed in the West African country. She was imprisoned for 4 days and saw firsthand the squalid conditions in which journalists are held in the country and the lack of basic rights.
At this point in time, when we are talking about the coronavirus as well, it's very, very worrying. This sanitation condition is not a very good one. Like I said, the situation of overcrowding in prison, access to your lawyer sometimes is problematic. We've had colleagues who are behind bars and they'll have to spend several months even before having access to lawyers.
Tukumbo says she believes it is wrong for journalists to be held like this, not only on moral grounds, but also because they play a vital role in covering the coronavirus crisis.
They have a huge role to play at this point in time in informing the population and giving them what they need as far as steps towards curbing the spread of coronavirus is concerned. But if most of these journalists are behind bars, who is going to tell the story?
Tukumbo says she hopes her country and others that continue to imprison journalists will see information and those who report it as part of the solution to the coronavirus, not part of the problem.
You can't be talking about we want the message out there and you're keeping journalists behind bars. So release them so that they can be able to do their job. The place of the journalist is not in jail. The place of the journalist is on the field, telling the story, keeping people informed. And at this point in time now, they are needed more than ever before.
Solomon Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Egypt's medical syndicate says three doctors have died from complications arising from the COVID-19, setting off protests over the burial of one of them. Police fired tear gas at the demonstrators in northern Egypt, who the Interior Ministry said were incited by rumors that the burial would spread the disease. The ministry vowed firmer response to any attempts to stir riots or obstruct burial procedures carried out under controls set by the Ministry of Health. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Chenawi spoke with Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, about this incident that angered the Egyptian public and what is needed to improve the awareness about coronavirus and its impact.
Whenever there is a pandemic, we always had this kind of reaction where there is high level of ignorance. If you go back to the Egyptian history in 19th century, we had cholera and some villages were cordoned by the government to prevent the spread of the epidemic here or there. And there were some clashes with the police, clashes with medical service, burial of people who died from cholera because they thought it will be spreading. Some people still have this scare of an unknown virus that is connected with death. So people are very scared. And why it happens in certain areas, usually very poor areas, where the people, you know, they are essential part of the informal sector. They have no insurance, they have no regular wages, and they know that if any one of them had fallen ill or died, nobody will take care of his family. And if anybody is falling ill, he will go and receive an inferior medical service compared to the rich. And that's why there is always this fear among them. They don't know what will happen, how they will be protecting themselves. So the only option for them is to protest. This is always the way of showing their displeasure and fear. This has been always peasant mentality. Informal sector, rural areas always have this mentality and attitude.
How would you assess the role of the Egyptian media in educating the public about coronavirus compared to a salvo of articles and talk shows praising the president, the government, or claiming Egypt is leading the world in fighting the virus?
Every country, whenever you have a natural disaster or pandemic, the government tries to play up its policies and reaction, while the opposition will do the opposite, will try to undermine the performance of the government. So this is not new. And of course, the government had in the beginning a mixed message from the media. Some in the beginning undermined it because they had this feeling that Africa is the least among the continent of the world to be affected. The economy had been already flourishing, and there was this dilemma in many decision makers all over the world to balance between the economic needs and facing this pandemic. So there was this contradiction. But the majority of Egyptians, let's say 95%, understood the message and they acted. And you can see that in people honoring the curfew. Only always 5% would always oppose any decision that you would make. Any new policy will always meet rejection and opposition from people who will not be benefiting. So what is happening in Egypt is not different from what is happening in other countries.
From a sociology point of view, what's needed to improve the public behavior dealing with this pandemic?
They have to assure people, especially those who are working in the informal sector, just earning the daily life, of financial compensation, quick and easy to get. Secondly, we have to also make a new message for every class, for every group in the country, with their own terminology and fears, addressing all the fears. You need also to have very strong laws regarding bullying of medical crew and burying of dead by corona, because like AIDS, it has also now began to carry a stigma, social stigma. People link those with death, and that's why people are afraid of them. And there has to be strict application and enforcement of the law by the police in areas where it happens. Otherwise, you will have repeated cases of bullying and riots whenever you are burying somebody who have been affected by COVID. The media also have to make a clear message, an update about the situation, and guide people what is to be done. Also, psychological assistance to people who need it. Of course, now the impact of the coronavirus and the policies that led to lockdown and curfew, of course, is making it difficult for people who are having a large extended family and live in a very small flat. This is, of course, stifling. The government should seize this moment to repeat the message regarding population control, family size. And this is a big problem for Egypt.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi speaking with Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo. Cameroon has required the wearing of face masks by all of its citizens and began large-scale production of the chloroquine to treat COVID-19. The country says its hospitals are already overwhelmed with more than 850 confirmed cases within 6 weeks, yet it expects confirmed COVID cases to rise into several thousands. Mokedun Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Almost everyone on the streets of Yaoundé began wearing masks Monday. Police were out to enforce the measure taken by the government to limit the spread of COVID-19. 22-year-old Christian Yubin, speaking via a messaging app, says the police forced him to buy and wear a mask.
Temperatures are very high, up to 35 degrees, and they're asking us to wear masks, which suffocates us. And I think the best thing to do is to respect social distance, stay far from people.
Dr. George Alain Etunimbala, Director of Pandemics and Epidemics at Cameroon's Public Health Ministry, says they are insisting on preventive measures because hospitals are already being overwhelmed by the number of COVID-infected persons.
On va libérer des listes, c'est-à-dire faire sortir des malades dans les hôpitaux qui n'ont pas besoin de traitement.
He says, with the ever-growing number of infected persons, the government has asked people who are feeling better in hospitals, including COVID-19 patients, to return to their homes, where they will have medical follow-up by hospital staff. He says the government is also transforming football stadiums and gymnasiums into facilities where COVID-19 infected persons will be received for treatment. Madeleine Twente, Cameroon's Minister of Scientific Research and Innovation, says besides the obligatory wearing of masks, the government has ordered the production of the drug chloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients. She says they have started producing 6,000 tablets per day and expect to drastically increase production when they get some more ingredients from China.
Le gouvernement veut que avant que ça n'atteigne le pic, on puisse.
She says President Paul Biya has ordered them to produce at least 8 million tablets of chloroquine each day as the situation is getting worse. She says Cameroon has the know-how and laboratories to produce the chloroquine, but what they lack are the necessary active pharmaceutical ingredients they can import from China and India, and that China has assured Cameroon that the ingredients will be shipped in 2 weeks. Chloroquine is one of the oldest and best known anti-malarial drugs. It has also attracted attention over the past few decades as a potential antiviral agent. Last week, Cameroon announced that it had seized counterfeit chloroquine from at least 300 pharmacies and hospitals and closed 2 fake pharmaceutical companies as thousands of its citizens were rushing for the drug with unproven belief that it can stop COVID-19 infections. Emmanuel Anyangwe Ngasa, a Cameroon-born medical doctor practicing in Germany, says U.S. President Donald Trump is leading many African countries to believe there is a cure for COVID-19 when scientists have not yet announced any. He spoke via a messaging app from Bonn.
What is the essence of that drug? Chloroquine has not been proven to treat COVID-19 successfully. It was unfortunate that Donald Trump took this thing up, spoke about it, and publicized it.
The rush for chloroquine as a treatment to COVID-19 began in Cameroon in March, after France announced that half of 14 patients who underwent chloroquine therapy got better, and when U.S. President Donald Trump referred to it as a potential cure for the ravaging coronavirus disease. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Africa has the largest HIV epidemic in the world, with almost 8 million people living with the virus. Most of these individuals are getting life-saving medicine through the world's biggest antiretroviral treatment program. But HIV experts say there are likely many more in the country who are infected and aren't on treatment because they haven't been tested. Darren Taylor spoke with one of South Africa's leading HIV scientists, Professor Francois Venter, about growing concern around how the COVID-19 outbreak could impact on people living with HIV.
It's the biggest question on everyone's lips in South Africa. We have a disproportionate percentage of the population with HIV and on treatment. We've got about 1 in 12 people in the country have HIV and are on antiretrovirals. The problem is that COVID has hit countries which have actually got very, very low HIV prevalence rates. So we actually just don't know is the short answer. It's a huge fear that people with HIV, one, might be more likely to get COVID, and secondly, might be likely to have more complications of it. We just don't know. We've got lots of surveillance in place at the moment, so we're hoping to get that answer quickly. And I think we're all praying hard that this is going to pass us by and that it's not going to disproportionately affect them. But if it does, that's going to change the trajectory inside the country if they are more likely to get it or to get complications of it.
Do we have any clues from other viruses how people with HIV could respond to COVID-19?
It's also a good question. People on stable antiretrovirals are no more likely to get flu than people that are HIV negative. The problem is they do get more complications of influenza. So having said that, people with HIV, there are some strange viruses and strange conditions they tend to be more prone to, but they're quite unusual. For the common and garden viruses, people with HIV, as long as they're on ARVs and stable and the immune system's okay, seem to shrug these things off as much as HIV negative people do. So I'm hoping that based on our experience of other viruses and the exposure to HIV positive people, that they won't suffer more so than the HIV negative population.
What are the differences between people who are on ARVs to treat their HIV and those who are not on this treatment in terms of how they will respond or could respond to COVID-19?
That is, again, the million-dollar question. We do worry that people who are not on ARVs are going to be more vulnerable to the virus and to the complications of the virus. There are viruses which do affect people with HIV far more severely when they're not on antiretrovirals. And there's nothing special to do. People just need to get to know their status and quickly get themselves on antiretrovirals. So by far and away, the best protection that they have.
That was South African medical scientist Francois Venter in conversation with VOA's Darren Taylor. South Africa's nationwide coronavirus lockdown is creating hardships for the 1 million domestic workers unable to get to the homes where they work. Untold numbers have been dismissed by their employers without pay or a way to get another job. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to South Africans in this difficult position about how their lives could be changing forever.
Like millions of South Africans, Georgina Maepa is stuck at home as her nation tries to stop the spread of coronavirus. Under the rules of the lockdown, the 53-year-old mother of four can't leave her home to do her work, cleaning other people's homes for about $80 a month. And like the majority of domestic workers, she doesn't have a formal contract. And so, as the nation prepared last month to lock down for 21 days, her employer's word was final. No work, no pay.
They say they haven't got money. If I want a lot of money, then I must look for another job. I'm just doing this job because there's no job now. We're suffering to get the other job.
Labor activist Pinky Mashiane says this scenario is all too common across South Africa. The union she leads, United Domestic Workers of South Africa, counts 400 members, among them gardeners, nannies, and cleaners like Maepa. Mashiane says she's been overwhelmed with stories like Maepa's since the lockdown began on March 26th. She maintains that because of the extreme circumstances, employers have a moral obligation, and in many cases a legal obligation, to continue paying employees even if they cannot come to work. But it's clear that many aren't. Furthermore, most workers have no recourse because the nation's labor courts are closed for the lockdown. Gardener Joseph Apane is among those out of work. The 50-year-old is now surviving on a fraction of his monthly salary. His boss told him and his 8 co-workers that with no money coming in, she couldn't afford his full monthly salary of just over $160.
It's not right. It's not good. It's not good. It's not right at all.
But his employer, Letitia Lovelock, owner of a garden service business, says she too is in a precarious position. Because her company can't do business during the lockdown, she also isn't bringing in any income. She says she's drained her resources to keep her employees afloat.
I have loaned till I cannot loan anymore to pay them to make sure that they have food and money. I can't loan anymore to such a degree that I have got myself into debt.
Apane says he'll be happy to return to Lovelock's company when the pandemic ends. But will he return to the same world he left? Trade union educator and activist Warren McGregor says he hopes not. He says the crisis demonstrates that South Africa must improve protections for informal domestic employees.
Let us move towards formalizing domestic work. Let's move towards formalizing gardening, etc. Most importantly, let's push back against the informalization of work that is and the casualization and the precaritization of work that is taking place right now.
Mashiane, the union leader, agrees. The women and men in her union, she says, keep South Africa running and often care for its most precious resource, its children. Maybe, she says, this lockdown will remind South Africans of their worth. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com.
On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Aparo, I'm Yeis Wuhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.